Thanks for joining the podcast with Tamara Gondor. Conversations with everyday innovators that reject status quo, think differently, and make a positive difference in their world. Listen in so you can ignite innovation, influence others, and make an impact too. And now your host, CrossFit addict, knee-high sock lover, and according to her kids, average cook, Tamara Gondor.
Hey everybody, Tamara Gondor here. Welcome to another awesome episode of With Tamara, that is me. I am really eager to get into this conversation today with Tracy Brown. I'm gonna let her introduce herself in a minute, but let me just say, what I'm super excited. The reason I'm excited for this interview is because I know that Tracy has this really kind of dynamic and diverse set of skills and experiences, and how she has leverage them in her business in very uncertain times, I think is going to be really insightful for the rest of us. So, Tracy, welcome to the show. Tell us a little bit about you and the work that you do.
Thanks for having me. I'm thrilled to finally get to be on the show. So, because, you know, I think you're just fantastic. So, I am the fraud busting body language expert. So my job is to assist in all kinds of investigations and also train folks, corporate people, association people, to spot lies, fraud, and identity theft hidden in plain sight.
So I have to ask before we dig in, how do you have a normal conversation with someone? Like, how does, you must always be looking at cues. Like, I'm super aware of where my hands are right now.
You know, people ask me that all the time, and they're nervous to be around me once they find out what I do. Here's the thing. My criteria for if I judged all the time, every move, I would be exhausted. I couldn't leave the house. And so I'm like, okay, do I care? Am I getting paid? Like, those are the two things. And so let's just say my husband's a very, very brave man to be around me. I know. Oh, with business, it's that I'm in business and that I'm still in business. and it sounds silly, but when I had these, I've been, working in this area for 20 years, and it was about 13 years ago, I decided, okay, it's time for me to speak. And the bar to get into a speaking business is really low. The bar to stay is really high. And so when I started, I had nothing. I had no contacts. I wasn't near as good of a speaker as I thought I was. And I figured it out. And here I am all these years later to where it's like, wow, I'm in business. And then the pandemic hit. And I figured it out even more to that I'm still in business. And the key is, because, you know, we talked about the inquisitive risk taker, the key is to through that all these years is to always be asking myself, because things evolve and the market evolves, and it's to ask yourself a different question. Because what the problem is, we ask ourselves the same question all the time, and so you get the same answer. But if you ask yourself different questions, you're going to be able to see a path to maximize your value. And that's, I think, what I've learned most recently. is because for a long time I was just kind of a run-of-the-mill body language expert. And not that any body language expert could be run-of-the-mill, because we are fantastic, all of us. But but it's about, okay, it's about market positioning and how can I maximize the value of what I have. Well, the audience and people are most interested in lie detection. And you know what? Every time I was on the news or every time I was on TV, that's always what it was. But it was someone telling a lie or not, but I didn't see it and I didn't translate it into my keynotes, right? And when I started to do that, things got a lot better. My fees got a lot better. I started booking a lot more. And then when I started understanding that financial fraud is a huge problem for folks, like the fraud losses, there's a line item every month that financial groups have that is fraud loss. So once I started figuring out, okay, what's the most expensive problem I can solve? It's right there on the spreadsheet. And I positioned myself around fraud and fraud loss, and wow, have things changed. So it's really about asking that question of what's the most expensive problem I can solve.
So I want to say I think your story is really powerful for a couple reasons. One is what I hear you saying is change your questions as the world changes. Mm-hmm. And I think we do fall into that trap of asking the same question over and over and over again, and we get the same answer, but the variables have changed. So of course it mm-hmm. doesn't work. The second thing is, I love how you were just saying, and I have a little bit of, you know, insider information because I've known you, but like that value that you could bring, what people wanted from you, was right in front of you for the longest time, right? Like it was everywhere. It's what people were asking you for. It's what you were getting on the news for. It's what clients wanted to hire you for. And it's just a matter of opening your eyes and realizing like, oh, that's the value I bring. That's the problem I solve, or that's where I can really position myself, whether that's internally at your company or mm-hmm. externally to clients. And so I love that you share that, because I think we all have things right in front of us that we're just not paying attention to.
It's true. And you know me, I'm a little like, I'm on the path, I'm kind of narrow focused from time to time, and I'm a little slow on the uptake about what's going on around me and how I can translate it. But once I get my claws in it, man, we're putting that on the tracks and going. And so I'm always asking myself that, and it's, how can I maximize my value? What other problems out there can I solve? And sometimes it takes me like just someone sitting me down and slapping me up the side of the head and be like, it's right here, don't you see it? And I was like, okay.
Oh, right. There it is.
Yeah.
Like, what a great exercise for all of us to do, though, is to like take a second and without judgment or assumption or bias, just go, huh? Like, what are people asking from me? What value do I bring? Why do they ask me to come to the meeting? Why do they ask me for my ideas? When do they do that? Right. And just really think of, I think that's a great exercise for all of us to do. I want to loop back and ask you a question. You said, you're proud of the fact that you got into business, but also that you're still in business. Mm-hmm. Will you talk a little bit about why, especially at the time of this interview, that is such a big win?
So it's the biggest win now because, you know, my bread and butter really is keynote speaking. I do work on investigations when they come across my desk, but really that's where I'm at. And when the pandemic hit, like conferences shut down and virtual wasn't as prevalent as like we kind of got into it. Right. But it took a while. And I sat down with myself and I was like, okay, because I knew from the recession in 2008 that something would come in, something would pop up that would allow me to be better positioned on the backside of this thing, like coming out, than the way I went in. And so that was my whole focus. And I'm not saying times weren't hard, right? Because I did the PPP loan and unemployment and all that stuff, right? And I was terrified. I'm like, am I gonna, like, have I built a house of cards, right? and is everything gonna wash away? But one of the people that was slapped me upside of the head, you know, and was helping me reposition myself. This was in the summer of 2019. She goes, just wait. She goes, just wait. She said, because something's going to happen to the economy. She goes, I don't know what it's going to happen. Something's going to happen soon. And she said, when the economy goes down, fraud goes up. And that's when you're going to be, that's your time. That's your moment. And so when the pandemic hit, like there was part of me that was excited. I was like, oh, it's here. I'm like, this is it. The thing is people were dealing with other things at that point.
Yeah.
So we're wearing masks and we're social distancing and we're doing whatever we're doing. And people have their comfort level with a new virus around. And so actually now is my time. But I knew that I had to be ready for it. So I spent all that time still speaking and still, being in contact with my clients and all that things. But it was about coming out like ready to go. So that was my focus. I think through the last, 18 months or 2 years or whatever wherever we're at now.
Yeah. Well, who knows? It's like an infinity loop. So the thing that I think is really cool and what I've watched, what I love about that story is instead of waiting to figure out what the future was going to look like, intelligent guesses, right? I mean, it's based on what you think is going to happen, but you actually spent that time pivoting and adjusting. And, you know, to your point, I just want to reemphasize this because I think people need to realize, cause I was in the same boat, but it allowed me to do other things. When we got locked down for what was going to be 2 weeks and then turned into about 2 years.
Yeah. Isn't that cute? 2 weeks.
I remember when we're having those conversations, we're like, we're out to dinner. We're like, look at us. We're not on the road for 2 weeks. How exciting. And then here we are. But what that really means is that business went away for a lot of people. So like some people, it meant working from home. Some people, it meant layoffs. And I think for a lot of solopreneurs like us, it really meant the business just went away. All right. So I just want to emphasize like how big of a change happened in about a 3 week period to you in your business, that it wasn't just like business changed. It was like all that revenue, all those clients, all the plans, it was like a wave crashing on the shore and taking out a sandcastle, like done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was like going to zero, right? House of cards, yeah. Boom.
Yeah. But I really appreciate what you're saying, which is okay. Like this sucks. And my time's coming, and which we can all think that, by the way, like I think in your industry, absolutely, but I think that's true for all of us. What do I need to do to position myself to be there? So that leads me to my next question, which is, because I think they're kind of connected, which is what's that innovative thing you've done to move forward?
Well, here's what I did. And a couple things. For one, I started a podcast because I thought, well, you know what? I know how to detect lies and fraud. However, I do not know how to run a scam. And so I decided to go out and interview everybody I could who has a fraud related story. So it could be criminals, it could be victims, or it could be law enforcement that caught them. And so I started out and I called it fraud busting. That was the name of it. And I started getting, and I had stories before, but I started getting into the meat of stories. And then I was like, man, these are good. These are really good. And I'm like, these would make great TV. And then I was like, you know what? They would make great TV. And so I set about developing my own TV series. And because, you know, I've done TV for years. It's been almost 10 or 11 years now I've done TV, but I'm on someone else's show and I have to wait for something to happen. And I love to be on TV. I think it's fantastic. And I was like, I think it's time to do this. And I had the idea and I started searching around and I found myself a writer out in Hollywood. She does crime and romance. And I'm like, perfect. This is exactly who I need. And we hid because it developed out. And because I have a crackerjack video guy who is way more than just a guy with a camera. And I called him. I'm like, hey, do you want to do a TV pilot? And he's like, sure. So it's called Truth, Lies, and Cover-Ups. And I have a pilot. I have some pretty fun sizzle reels. And that'll strike terror in you that are just chilling. And it's all about financial fraud and the signs that are almost always hidden in plain sight that if caught in the moment could have stopped hundreds of thousands up to millions in losses. So we had and I had the time to do it, and I would never have to. This is not the kind of thing you can organize from the road at all. I mean, I did everything from, and it is all encompassing 16-hour days to get it done. I did everything from site visits and selections to casting to directing to, the only thing I didn't do was, the only thing I didn't do really was lighting, and I didn't physically write the script, but I work with the writer very closely. So, that's what I did. We are, working on selling it in Hollywood right now. And I actually have made a little bit of progress, and I have a producer who's doing some more development work on it. So that's what I did. And, the first story is someone, and I know that you know this person, and, she wants to remain nameless, but it's about a good friend of both mine and yours who, woke up one day, decided she wanted a divorce, started looking into the family finances, and found herself and her family underwater about $350,000 and had no idea. So it turns out that happens a lot. And there were signs that were missed. So that is what's in the show. And whether or not it ends up streaming or on TV or what have you, I use it in my keynotes, and it is fantastic as a learning tool. And it's much better than me just standing up and giving facts and things like that. So, because people get really enrolled and really into the story.
You're listening to Conversations with Everyday Innovators on With Tamara Gondor Podcast. Let's take a moment to thank our generous partners that make this possible.
Can't wait to share this product with you. It's made a huge difference in my household. It's Howdy Puppy, the premier CBD pet treats for dogs. Now, for those of you who know me, you know I have a 100-pound Mastiff named Zoe Bear, and she is a cuddle bun, but she's 10 years old, and she suffers from two things. First, from the aches and pains of old age. We go for these long walks that she loves, but afterwards she's got joint stiffness, and it's hard for her to get up off the floor. And she suffers from a little bit of anxiety. She doesn't love new people. So when you come over to my house, she tends to bark. She gets really anxious. She gets very riled up. So I started giving her CBD pet treats. And guess what? It has helped tremendously with both. Now her aches seem to be a little bit better. She doesn't have as hard of a time getting up off the floor. She recovers faster from our walks. And when people come over, she's less riled up. She's able to handle it better. CBD has been proven to help with aches of old age, joint stiffness, nightmares, anxiety, separation anxiety, stress, hyperactivity. I really encourage you to go check out the website. And here's the best part. It comes in three flavors, steak, bacon, and cheese wraps. And the steak look like steaks, and the bacon look like bacon. And yeah, the cheese wraps look like cheese wraps. So it's so much fun to give it to them. I'm giving Zoe a little bit of steak or a little bit of bacon or cheese every day. It's so great. She loves them. I love what it does for her. It's a win-win. And hey, if you're new to CBD pet treats like I was, I encourage you to go check out the website, because on there they have blogs that talk about the efficacy and the safety of it. This product is great. It is USA grown, USA processed and produced. It is non-GMO. The list goes on and on. But go to the website and check it out. And if you've got a dog that suffers from those aches and stiffness or anxiety or hyperactivity, this might be the product for you. Howdy Puppy. I will put the link in the show notes. And in full disclosure, I love it so much that I am a founding investor and partner. So good. Howdy Puppy.
So here's what intrigues me about your story, Tracy. So I'm sitting here listening to the evolution of it. Is, you know, you've got a business, you've got one way of delivering your expertise, then 2020 hits and you're in a position of like, well, that way isn't happening right now and may or may not come back in the same form. We don't know. Mm-hmm. So how, you know, you leverage this time to think differently and build a different way to deliver your knowledge, expertise, and experience to the world. And I think that's really cool. And I think that's a lesson we can all take about like, hey, the way you're doing it now doesn't necessarily mean that's how you have to do it moving forward. In fact, maybe it opens up room for other opportunities and other ways. And so I guess my question for you is, in that journey, I have to imagine you dealt with people who were like, you don't know anything about Hollywood. Like, what do you, live in Denver, Colorado, like, and you're a fraud expert, but you're not a producer, or like, this is going to be crazy expensive. Why would you spend your money there? Or like, fill in the blank, right? Mm-hmm. What kind of pushback did you hear and how did you deal with it?
You know what? I didn't hear one word of pushback.
Not one.
And I think, well, Matt has learned, my husband, that it doesn't matter. So we might as well be quiet. But no, I did not hear one word of pushback. And the only pushback I had was from myself. And there were moments. I mean, there were moments, Tamara, during filming, because let's talk about a fish out of water, complete fish out of water. I realized... I realized when I was shooting this, I have never even been on a real TV set. The only, except for a TV newsroom, that is it. And so I was like, oh, wow. So I have to direct the actors, and like, they need to, like, you have to set the camera where the actors are going to go and like figure out like all of that. And fortunately, you know, I didn't have to, I just had to have the vision, and I had to surround myself with people who did know what was going on, and people that I really, really trusted, because it was a very expensive endeavor. But one that I knew that if I didn't do, I'd kick myself for the rest of my life. Like, I just had that feeling.
So did you not hear any pushback? Cause you surrounded yourself with people who, I mean, I know people like gave you insight and advice and like said, hey, there's a hole over here, you might want to fill it. Right. Like, mm-hmm. That's very different. I actually really value people like, hey, Tamara, you got a blind spot. And mm-hmm. I don't think we value those people enough. We think they threaten our vision. But did you not hear the stuff because you're like, I don't want to hear it. I know what I'm like, I've got my path and I'm on it. Or did you not hear it because you didn't have those people around you?
No, they didn't. It was just me. Like, I had moments. I did. I had moments because I like the dollars start totaling up, and it is like a lot of dollars, like a lot of money. Like, pretty much I spent all my PPP money on it. And more. And so like, I had moments where I was like, what the hell am I doing? Like what on earth?
So how did you push through those moments? Like, what kept you going forward when the dollars are adding up, when like, you know, I mean, you have, the reality is in doing that endeavor, and what I appreciate about it is you have no mm-hmm. guarantees either. You weren't being paid to do it. There wasn't right. a guaranteed end buyer for the show, right? So
it's just that I was like, when I had that one moment with myself where I was like, what has happened here? How did you get in this deep? And it's like the fourth day of shooting, and I'm like, you know what, you got to finish it. At this point, you have to finish it. Like, you can't just not finish because it was a 5-day shoot. So but I think it's that deep belief that it's like, you know what? I have something here that is a bigger message than like, this is a universal big message. And I know that I can do this. Like, I know that I am the one, and you know what? I don't know anyone in Hollywood. I am going to find some new friends, like, and friends that can help me make this happen, because I think it's there with what people want. But you know, when it comes to crime shows and stuff, it's all about murder. I can't do murder. I'm super sensitive to people's energy, and I can't do a steady diet of true crime, violent crime. And so financial fraud is like my limit of being able to deal on a day-to-day basis. I just think there's something to it. There's something to it here. And that's what kept me going.
And I hope we all hear this kind of the openness to pivot and then the perseverance to push through it. I think that's a big part of innovation is, and being your best and achieving what's possible for you, whoever, you know, you are out there, is actually being willing to see different ways to do things and then being all in. And kind of your point about like, I'm in this deep, I might as well keep going. I feel like we all have those moments of, well, I'm here. I don't know how I got here, but I'm here. So might as well keep going. And I actually think that's a really, like, it sounds very blasé, but well, I think it's a really healthy attitude to have.
Thank you. And those moments, you know, it's like, I look around, I looked around at one point, and I had 11 people working for me. And I'm like, oh my God, how did this happen? And like regular TV shows, it's like 200 people. And we pulled off so much with those 11 people because everybody was committed. Like everybody was committed to the mission. They loved the concept and they're going to do everything they can. And I mean, it was 14-hour days. It is not kidding. What it takes to do a television production, a film production, right? And so like just surrounding yourself with the right people who really want to make sure that it's perfect, like to the level that you can do. But the interesting thing about that is that the person at the top was me, and I knew the least of everyone there. So I tried to manage these different demands that I didn't really know about, right? So that was interesting too.
But I think there's a really good lesson in here around knowing what you're trying to accomplish and not just surrounding yourself with people, let me say it a different way. I think it's really cool when I see people who know they don't know what they're doing, but know that there's a mountaintop to get to. And I think a lot of that drives innovation and it drives the right teams to come together to make that climb happen. And I think when you, as the everyday innovator, are more focused on building the vision and showing people what's possible and surrounding yourself with the right people versus trying to know all the answers, that's how you start to get stuff done. And I think I lose sight of that. And I start to be like, I need to know the nitty gritty. I don't need to know the nitty gritty. I just need to know what's possible at the mountaintop. But it's really easy, I think, to get stuck in the, like, I have to know it all. I do the details, right? And assuming that's how the vision's going to come to fruition.
Yeah. It's figuring it out as you go. Like it's, if you like when you don't have a net and when you're making it up as you go, but you have the idea, like you can accomplish anything, like on just about any budget, like you really can. And in all this holding yourself back, it's not the right time. Guess what? It's never the right time. It's never going to be. And if you keep asking the question of what's the most expensive problem I can solve, like how can I make my message bigger? How can I solve something differently? Then and then all of a sudden you have the impetus to do it, right? Because like the world has changed, then you got to change with it or try to go bigger or really just, what are you doing? Go get a job somewhere. Like,
I think there's two ways you can look at change. Maybe three. Way one is, I guess there's three. The first way is I'm going to sit and wait it out. Doesn't ever go well, but people do that. They put their head in the sand. Way two is keep up with change, which is very reactive and very exhausting. Way three, which is what you're showing us, and I think what really makes everyday innovators so strong out there is how do I get ahead of the change, right? How do I leverage the change? And that's the way that I think we want to move forward. I think we now know that disruption can happen overnight, like truly happen, not just like, oh, disruption is this big theoretical thing. It's like literally overnight it can happen. And change is constant. So, and it's accelerating. So in our world, so take the third path the way Tracy did. I love that. So let me flip it for a second. What's the challenge that you faced and how did you overcome it?
The challenge that I, like during the show or just general purpose?
Overall in life and work.
The biggest one?
Sure.
The biggest challenge that I face, I'll tell you what it is. The biggest challenge that I face is getting out of my own way. And I don't mean that in the typical way of like, oh, I talk myself out of stuff and like that kind of thing. That's not what I mean. What I mean is that I am at times overconfident to the point that I do not see what is around me. and that's as bad of a problem as not getting started, which is like typically how that goes. And so I've really had to back myself down, surround myself with people that can see. And then most importantly, listen to them. Like, listen to them. Don't be like, oh, that's cute, and then keep going, right? Because I'll do that too. So I think that's kind of a constant for me.
That's so interesting to me, the kind of idea of, it's not self-doubt, it's self-confidence that was the problem.
Oh, it'll undo me every time.
But I do think that we let our egos, and I don't know if it's your ego, but just in general, I do think we get in our own way by like not wanting to listen to other people. And I always tell, I think in our world, we always say like the yes butters are your biggest enemy. I actually think they're your greatest friend if you listen to them. Doesn't mean that the doubters, that's different. But the people who poke holes, help you see the challenges, help you push forward, don't just take everything you say as like, everything's great, because the truth is none of us see the whole picture. So I think we need those people in our lives, and we don't actually value them enough.
Oh yeah. Yeah, it's true. But you have to find the right one. Like, because I have a very small group of people that I listen to. Absolutely. And then a smaller group that I listen to some of what they say, and then everybody else, I don't listen at all. Right. And so, and I think it's important to have that, people that really care, people that, because anybody will give you advice, right? But the people who you know you have to see again, and they're going to be asking you questions about what went on, not because they want to be absolutely right, because they actually care about my success. Like, that's a different level of person, and that's who I've really worked to surround myself with.
So, you do me a favor, real quick. We're almost out of time. I can't even believe it. But you shared a story with me once about going to a meeting of people in your industry and everybody wanting to give you advice, mm-hmm. like, and kind of, you and I had this whole conversation about it and why you were frustrated by that. Do you remember that?
I do. I remember. It's been a long time. Share that, because
I think this whole theme of like, pick the people you listen to. I'm hearing that a lot in these interviews. I think that's if I look at all the patterns, that's one of them that's come out. Mm-hmm. Would you share that story real quick? Because I had the same experience with this group, and we both were like, what the heck?
Yeah. Well, okay. So I went and I had designed my own book cover, and this has been years ago. This has probably been 10 years ago. And I went and I was like, I'm going to go I'm going to see what people think. This is going to be my test group. And everybody had advice, and it was, I'm like, what? Like, no, this is great. It has me on it. What could be better than a cover with me on it? And they didn't like the tagline, and they didn't like this. And it was kind of like upsetting a little bit, right? And then I stepped back, right? Because I think me and you were talking, and then I went home and I was like, okay, who gave me this advice? I was like, who really gave me this advice? I was like, do they even have a book? Like, are they? And it was like,
and do they know your business?
Yeah, no. I'm like, they don't know my book. They don't have a book. They've never been my version of successful, right? At least that I could see. And I was like, wait a minute. I was like, I am never going and doing that again. Never. Because everyone has a big bunch of ideas, and not a lot of them had any traction under like a history of what it took. And so I think that's like lesson learned, right? Lesson learned.
I just remember how frustrated you were after, and us talking about like how people feel the need to give advice when they know nothing about your business. Like, they don't stop to ask you a few questions. Like, what are you trying to accomplish with this book? Mm-hmm. What have you already done? What's worked for you in the past? Mm-hmm. And I just found, so I just wanted you to share that, because I love that story, because it makes me laugh, but also because in a good way, but also because I think it is a great lesson for all the everyday innovators out there that like, hey, I think advice and input is really important, but I think we have to know where the people are coming from. And that's the lens you have to put it through. Mm-hmm. And sometimes people who know nothing about your business will have a brilliant insight that you would have never thought of, but kind of to your point, like, know who you're willing to take it, like, real advice from.
Right. And for me, it has to have a track record of success behind.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure. Are. Yeah. So my next question is, just speaking of people, is, as an inquisitive risk taker, everyday innovator, what advice do you have for other everyday innovators of all types, mm-hmm. that are out there looking to innovate, influence, and make an impact?
Innovation is not a exercise where you sit down and you You're like, I'm going to innovate right now. Like, that's not what it is. Innovation is looking around you and taking that whisper of inspiration, that of something that you feel needs to happen or a direction that you need to go. And so it's much more of a lifestyle, I think, than a exercise. And so that's what I think.
Whisper of innovation. I love that. Mm. Because to me, not all innovation slaps you across the face. No. In fact, most of it is very, it's these subtle nudges that add up. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, actually. No, none of it will slap you across the face. Like, absolutely none of it, right? So you have to listen to those, that little inside thing that's like, hey, go that way, you know, and try it out. And here's the thing, if it fails, because I've had plenty of stuff that fails, plenty, it'll lead you to the next thing where you're supposed to be. And so you can't like get all upset with failure. You have to, you know what? Keep going. That's what you do.
So, you know, it's interesting to me. So as I'm hearing you talk, I think, you know, the inquisitive kind of is what keeps you open to new thinking, new ideas, new perspectives, once you get out of your own way.
Right.
And I think the risk taker, like you heard in the story, I'm over here doing this, but I'm going to go produce a show. Mm-hmm. Like, that's such a bold move to take. But also there's so much innovation in doing that, right? Like, you have to be willing to be uncomfortable. This has been so insightful, Tracy. Thank you. So many nuggets of wisdom. To close on a personal note, okay. What's the one thing we'd be surprised to learn about you?
Oh, I am a hula dancer.
That is surprising.
I'm a howly hula dancer, and they don't mind if I jump around in the back. Yeah.
How long have you been doing that?
Probably more than 15 years. And I'm still not good though. I would like to point out, I am not a good hula dancer, but I still like it.
Why do you love it? What do you get out of it?
I get aloha, which is a connection to the islands, and that's where I've trained with kahunas for a long time. I love the music. I love my friends that I get from there, because you know what? They don't care what I do for work. All they care is, am I a good person? Do I show up and do I try? And so that's what I really like.
It's funny. That is exactly why I love CrossFit.
Perfect.
Like, people don't care what you do outside the gym. Yeah. Do you give it your all when you're there?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. And the community and all the other stuff too. Yeah. Oh my gosh, Tracy, so wonderful. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Congratulations. By listening to this podcast, you took another step towards becoming an everyday innovator. To leap forward, visit www.gotolaunchstreet.com and take the Innovation Quotient Edge Assessment to discover your unique everyday innovator style and access the Everyday Innovator Digital Magazine for the top tools, insights, and inspiration at your fingertips 24/7. Tamara will be back with another Everyday Innovator conversation soon. In the meantime, if you got a nugget of value out of this podcast, let Tamara know by leaving a 5-star review and comment. Your review equals more guests, more listens, bigger impact. Until next time.